Welcome back to Farm Foundations, the podcast where we dig deep into the world of homesteading and sustainable living. I'm your host, Tyler Lowry, joined by my co-hosts, Bo Prock and Joe Grissom.
Hey there, folks.
Howdy, everyone.
In today's episode, we're going to trade out poultry discussions for a talk about bartering. But before we dive into that, let's take a quick look back at updates from the past week with our week in review. Joe, you want to kick us off with your week in review?
Yeah, we had a lot of rain, so we spent some time indoors, and we were glad to have it. But we did get work done outside as well. Built some more goat fence, and of course, bottle feeding the baby goat four times a day. We planted some yard flowers, added litter to and compost bin, gathered mullein this morning, wild lettuce, and some poke salad. And tomorrow we'll be processing a beef. Also ordered a new Happy Chicken tractor. I'm hoping that comes in soon, and we'll let you know how that goes. And on a side note, Liz and I were excited to see two new birds here on the backyard that we've never seen before, a yellow warbler and American redstart.
It's always exciting when you've got new wildlife venturing into your backyard, especially when you're, you know, used to the robins that are there every day, and you get to see a little bit of flash of color. That yellow bird was just absolutely gorgeous fluttering around back there.
It just makes me feel like what we're doing is working. And when it's good for wildlife, it's good for our life.
Bo, what about you? What have you been up to this week?
So I've spent most of my week in the garden. I have all of my plants in now. I was a little worried with all the rain. We got a ton of rain there kind of all at once. And the next day, my tomato plants did not look very good. But they came out of that. And we've pretty well just spent most of our week in the garden now.
I spent quite a bit of time this week. Joe's been teaching me quite a bit about tallow and rendering, and we've made soap. I think we mentioned that last week, but I've been doing some like face creams and some sugar scrubs, and I've been kind of experimenting with that, and that's been quite a bit of fun for me this last week. And of course, pickling the mullein today. I guess I knew mullein grew wild around here naturally. I just didn't realize how really prolific it is. You can't drive, you know, what was it, 100 yards down the back road here in Purdy without passing a pretty big mullein plant. So that was kind of a fun learning experience, learning a little bit about foraging as well. So as we move on, that's kind of our weekend review. Today we're going to talk about bartering and what bartering means and why it's important to us in the homesteading community. To kind of kick us off on this first segment, I want to talk a little bit about the history as well as the benefits of bartering. So to bring some historical context, I guess we'll just talk really, you know, bartering is one of our oldest forms of economic exchange. Before money was invented, which is kind of a hard grasp for me to understand, or really I think any of us, really we didn't have a way to pay for goods or services. So people bartered. They exchanged whatever goods they had to offer, whatever skills they had, and that's how they were able to source the products they needed to live, and it was also how they brought their products to market. We've got a couple notes here. If you guys want to just pick a bullet point, and we'll talk a little bit about what bartering looked like over the years in different civilizations.
I can take the Mesopotamia, because that's what I was reading earlier today. So somewhere around 6000 BC, one of the oldest, or the earliest, I guess, recorded instances of bartering occurred in Mesopotamia. People were trading goods such as grain, livestock, tools, pretty well whatever they had, and the barter system was facilitated by the development of writing, which allowed for the recording of transactions.
Down in Egypt and Babylon, around that same time period, bartering was also pretty common. They exchanged similar commodities like grain, beer, linens. That Babylonian bartering would have included other things such as food, spices, handcrafts, things that maybe didn't come from the region, but they could trade their regional goods for stuff to be shipped off as well.
And during the Middle Ages, bartering continued to be a primary means of trade, especially in the rural areas. The feudal landlords often accepted goods and services as rent or taxes from their constituents, if you will. Farmers exchanged produce for tools, clothing, and other necessities. Markets and fairs were central hubs for bartering, allowing people from different regions to trade a variety of goods.
You know, as we think back on that, that was back in the Middle Ages, but in modern times, maybe not so much here in the U.S., but in other countries, my travels down to Mexico and Haiti, there are still a lot of markets where they do open trading. So, yeah, there's maybe some cash exchange like we see in a farmer's market here. But down in Mexico, you know, they bring their tomatoes to the market and they may trade those for beef or fish or whatever. So it's still, even with the advent of money, I don't think bartering's ever going to completely disappear, especially when we have times of economic instability. We've got wars going on, financial crises, particularly in the less developed world. But I think it's even becoming more of a thing for us here in the United States. We're, you know, arguably very well developed, but it's still an important way for us to supplement our economy.
So I really like this topic because I've grew up in the last 20 years in transportation. So whenever I read that, you know, we're talking about it being one of the earliest, you know, forms of bartering. But some of those people, you know, were taking their boats across, you know, water, you know, masses, people trading, you know, with other people. So, you know, it's a very early form of logistics and planning. And, you know, there had to be a ton of logistics and planning that went into making some of those trades for those people. So there was a lot more than, you know, what we might do now, just walking next door with some fresh picked tomatoes and trading it for a chicken or whatever. Those people really had to plan and, you know, really get their crap together and, you know, be ready to make those trades so they could survive longer.
Well, I think, you know, for me, until we've gotten ready for this episode, you think about bartering and it is just that, you know, trading some tomatoes for some cucumbers, but it can be as simple as that, or it can be as complex as having a ledger and saying, hey, you know, let's set up a trade network. And that's something that's very real. And the more I get involved in this community, I see it a lot more. And we're going to talk about it a little bit more. So as we move on in this segment, we've talked a little bit about some of the history. Let's talk about some of the benefits. Why I feel like we're all so used to a cash society. Why would I think about bartering? What are some benefits that brings to me as a homesteader? Bo, what are your thoughts on that?
So the one that I thought of, you know, first and foremost is there's no taxes in bartering. And I love that. I absolutely hate paying taxes. And I've done a lot of bartering here just recently. And really my first real true experience with bartering over the last couple weeks. And looking like that's one of my favorite things. There was no option fee to pay. There was no taxes. There was no credit card fee involved in it. It was just trading of goods back and forth. So that's been my favorite for sure.
I like to think about, you know, we've talked a lot about community on this podcast, but when you start bartering and trading, that's just another feather in your hat to add to that community. And you can build those relationships and you can build that trust. I think that community aspect is really cool. Joe, what are your thoughts on benefits that we see bartering?
Well, a couple of fold. I'll back up just a little bit. I think it's interesting that if you study the Old Testament, Exodus, Genesis in particular, there's even schedules for those Mesopotamian people. It schedules on what different values, you know, and I can't recall off the top of my head with chapter and verse, but it's interesting, you know, a goat is only worth three pigeons or what have you. There's sort of an explanation. So it's been going back that far. But for me, it's important to make sure that we always focus on reducing our dependency on currency. And we may not always have that. And it's happened over and over throughout history. And I draw attention to our neighbors to the south of us in Cuba. You know, when political things took place, their money was devalued. And those folks today still are working agriculturally in a bartering system. So just because we have folding money with value in our pocket doesn't mean that we always will. And we need to have that skill practiced and polished should something happen. And I'm not a doomsday guy. I think our economy is strong, but I like to have a list of people. I want to be that guy that says, I know a guy. And if you need a rabbit, I want to be able to call Bo. Or if I need someone to help me cook for a party, I need to know that person. So it's good to have that that list of people so that should that money disappear, you're not going to be put out.
As we get in this a little bit further, it may come in further segments, but I think bartering, once you get good at bartering, it gives you a lot of access to diverse skills and goods that maybe you couldn't afford with regular folding money, or maybe you just didn't have access to otherwise. But when you get kind of in your lane and you learn and understand how to barter, I think you can access some of those things a little bit easier. As we move in, let's just kind of jump into our next segment and just talk about what can we barter. Joe, do you want to lead us here with some common items or services that are exchanged in bartering?
Well, I think it's pretty well accepted. You can barter anything except your wife and your kids. You know, other than that, I think it's open to your imagination, and that's the beauty of it. So if you have services if you need services, if you need your yard mowed and somebody needs eggs, by God, trade them. Money doesn't have to be there. It's two happy people parting ways with what they need. So eggs and produce are easily, you know, this time of year, particularly for farmers to go trade. Sadly, this time of year, every other farmer has eggs and produce to trade. So the value there is much less than what you would find normally.
Well, have you ever traded for any like handmade goods or crafts or anything along those lines?
I'm close to that. I did a show for somebody once, and I was selling some things that were not handmade, but I took some things from a buddy of mine that were handmade, and he paid me in being able to take, you know, some of his handmade goods home with me after the show. So a little bit, not much. I haven't done a whole lot of handmade stuff, but I hope to. One of the things that I've found since we've moved into our new house on the farm is I've gotten pretty good at building things with wood, and I enjoy that. So I hope that sometime in the near future, some of those things that I can build, maybe I can trade for, you know, livestock or produce or something along those lines.
What are some of the things that you've seen people trading?
I mean, I think I'm with Joe. At least in this country, everything except for your wife and your kids. It's kind of acceptable in other countries, I guess, but here that's frowned upon.
Especially at my house.
My house wouldn't fly with that either. But I think it's open to your imagination. I think it comes down to, hey, I need something. Hey, Tyler needs something. What do I have that you need? What do you have that I need? And as long as both people are happy with it, I think it's fine to barter.
I think that kind of comes into play when we... So one of the next things I want to talk about is tips for determining the value of your goods and services. And that can change drastically. A tomato can be valued at 10 cents today, but at $2 tomorrow. So it just depends on what I need and what you need. If I need to... you know, trade some cucumbers, I need some dirt work done. You know, is a cucumber worth some dirt work? Not normally, but if you find the right situation and the right opportunity and you know somebody that's got a backhoe that really loves pickles, I mean, you might be in business. So you really have the opportunity to leverage your goods and services as opposed to just slapping a cash price on it. You might be able to get a little bit more out of that. And I think that's kind of a cool thing when you get into bartering that differentiates it from cash. What are your thoughts, Joe?
Well, I think we need to use cash as a baseline. So, for example, if you had tomatoes valued at $1 a piece and the dirt work guy had a $5,000 bill, we would at least know that we're not on the same planet. You know, we need to really kind of figure out what are those tomatoes actually worth. Nobody's going to love tomatoes $5,000 worth. You know, the little dirt work maybe, or if you wanted to tip the guy with some fresh tomatoes, he'd probably appreciate that. But he can't pay his bills with tomatoes. So we need to at least figure out where our goods and services are worth roughly and go from there.
So Joe, as we talk a little bit more about some of these tips, I know you've done quite a bit of bartering here on your farm. So this is a good spot for you to share some of your experience and some of the things. I know one of the big things that at least I have done historically is barter with labor. And I know that's something that you've been pretty active in doing. So if you want to tell us a little bit about bartering labor and kind of what that looks like for you and some of the successes that you're having with that, and then kind of extrapolate on how you define the value of that labor and how you make sure you're on an equal footing.
Sure. So really, really simply, it's a matter of working on a homestead, especially one the size of mine. There's more work to be done than one guy can do, particularly one guy that doesn't own a lot of equipment. You know, my tractors, my horses, the equipment that I have that we work the horses with, you know, a lot of times I have some things and enough of some things and not enough of another. So, you know, I either have to trade my services for somebody that has equipment, which is often the case, or I have to trade my equipment for somebody that has more labor. So we'll talk about a couple of them real quick that I have with neighbors that are very close. The first one is next door neighbor that has a very large family. He's got a bunch of kids that like to work and are always hounding me for assistance. You know, Joe, we want to help you. How can we help you? And they're looking, they're hungry little guys. They want to make a living. They want some extra cash. But I traded them a dairy heifer. I had a purebred Jersey heifer here. They have a family milk cow, and they came over one day and were admiring my cow, and they said, Joe, what would it take to get a cow like that? And I knew very well that those children didn't have the cash, but I had pastures. I had 100 acres full of thistle. And if any of you understand what it takes to get rid of thistle, it's either massive amount of chemicals, strategic amount of chemicals placed at exactly the right time and date, or it takes a bunch of kids with grub hoes spending the summer chopping and sweating and swearing. And I think that's what happened. And I was able to meet the goals of improving my pasture without chemicals, which is really important to us. So those kids, you know, I lost I don't want to say I lost. I traded a nice heifer. I didn't particularly need her, to some kids that were thrilled to have the opportunity to own their own cow and still love her today. She's their family milk cow. But I don't have nearly the thistles I had because they got in there and chopped and worked hard. So I think that's a real victory, and that's the kind of arrangement that works well for anybody, no matter if they've got a suburban home or an apartment home. You can trade that kind of process. Now, to build on that, they called me, the same neighbors called me and said, we'd like to borrow your tractor. And I said, well, sure. And they said, well, we want to rent it. What does it take to rent it? And I said, well, I won't rent it, but I'll trade it to you. And they said, well, what do you want? So again, I needed labor. So my arrangement with my tractor or any equipment that I have, if someone takes a piece of equipment off of my farm, then I require them to A, bring it back full of fuel. If it was at a half a tank, it better be at a half a tank when you bring it back, just like Avis or Hertz. Or if it breaks on your watch, you know, if the engine throws a rod, you got to pay for the new engine or the repair of that engine. And so everyone understands that, because I certainly don't have the money to get back a broken tractor. I can't just go out and replace that. So everyone takes the tractor, you bring it back full, or the way you found it. If it breaks, you take it. But then here's where I make out. If they've got my tractor for a half a day, they need to give me a half a day running it. My fuel, their labor. So for every day or half day or week that they have my equipment, I expect a week's worth of labor out of their family. And that can be some of the older children or the mom, the dad. Guys, I can't hardly mow ragweed in August. I mean, ragweed just really kills me with hay fever and, you know, seasonal allergy type symptoms. But I can get a bunch of kids over here in August and run a bush hog, and it works well for all of us. So in the spring, they need their garden tilled or dirt work done with my tractor. And I bank those hours for in August when I need someone to mow ragweed. So it just works out really good for us.
Bo, I know you did some trading with Jesse last week. How did you guys sit down and determine what the value was of your quail or her quail and your rabbits? And was that just a conversation, or what did that process look like?
So what we learned is that me and Jesse are neither one very good at bartering, because we went into it both really struggling to value what we had in fear of offending the other person, I think. But I think what we ended up getting to was if we were both smiling when the transaction was done, then it was fair. I still to this day have no idea who came out on top, and don't care as long as she doesn't care. She left happy, I was happy, and we ended up sitting around probably visiting. She brought her husband, which I hadn't. He came over here one of the nights where we were visiting with each other, but I didn't really get a chance to talk to him much, so I got to meet him and visit. And my wife was there, who hadn't really got to spend much time with him, and they all got to visit. So we learned that if we're going to continue doing that, we both just had to end up happy. And her quail were beautiful, my rabbit was beautiful. So what, you know, my understanding of quail value was what I had got at the auction, right? And both ways, I had bought rabbits at an auction, I'd bought quail at an auction. But her quail were much nicer than any quail I'd ever bought at the auction. And the rabbits I traded her were much nicer than any rabbits I had bought at the auction. So I think part of that kind of crosses each other out. Now, I would not want to trade auction quail for my nicer rabbits at the same bird to rabbit ratio that we did. But, you know, her birds came into the quail pen at twice the size of the birds that I had in there that were twice as old as the birds that she had brought. So it went well for both of us. I've got more quail now, and she's got some rabbit meat, she's got some live rabbits, and I've got some blackberry bushes, so I think we're all happy.
As long as you walk away happy, I want to be careful with bartering. It doesn't always have to be a strict business transaction. I think Joe told a story a couple weeks ago about losing a lot of his garden crop due to some bad straw that he had, and he had... I don't even know that he had necessarily traded, but given away a bunch of tomato sets. And I think that still kind of applies to the bartering world. It doesn't necessarily always have to be equal. It can still come back and benefit you in the end when you have a failed crop and you say, oh, hey, you know, I gave away a bunch of tomato sets and I'm friends with those people. I may have took the short end of the stick when I gave them a tomato set, but now that my crops failed, they have excess crops that they can kind of support me a little bit. So I think that's important to remember as well, that the value doesn't always necessarily have to be equal.
Or immediate.
I think it washes out in the end that plays into really a good bartering network.
I think community should always outweigh value.
Agreed.
In my mind.
You know, I like to say when we talk about bartering, you know, initially people have a thought of the old trade blanket, you know, where we would unroll a blanket and we would have whatever we had, a button or a tin cup, the way we saw in the old Western movies. You know, the trade blanket was, here's what I have, what do you have, let's assign value to it and try to go away happy. But bartering today is not that. We can't have that trade blanket mindset. We have to have a much broader view. I like to say this one, it's a little cliche, but let's try to be the neighbor indeed and not the neighbor in need. So if we're out there giving away tomato sets, which now is a big part of my spring thought process, I give away as many tomato sets as I plant, maybe more. Should I have a failed crop? You know, it only takes a little bit of hail and you have no tomatoes. And that particular year, Tyler, you spoke about, if it wasn't for me getting back fresh tomatoes in spades, You know, the fact of the matter is I got more tomatoes that year than I probably would have harvested. Everybody found out that my tomato crop was bad and they all brought it to me. And I thought, well, this is fantastic. All I did was stand in the air conditioning canned tomatoes. So I need to have that crop fail every year. But it really was a testament to being the friend in deed. And then when I became the friend in need, it came back in spades. So you're right about it not being immediate. But, you know, take opportunities. Yesterday, I had another neighbor call and ask me to look at his tomatoes. So I drove over there and we talked about his soil and his trellising opportunities. And I noticed he had a giant pile of gravel parked out there by the road. And I said, what are you doing with the gravel? And I knew he didn't have a tractor. He said, well, I've got to get that in my little lawn tractor, and I'm going to put that over here by my cars. And this was a huge load of gravel, and he was going to move every bit of it with a shovel. And I said, well, hey, you know, I have a tractor. And he said, oh, would you? And I said, you're welcome to it. And he said, well, you would do that? And I said, yeah, but here's the trade. For every hour it's gone, I want you to come run it at my house. Well, he was thrilled because, you know, to think about a giant dump truck load full of 1-inch gravel moving with a shovel, that guy's 70 years old. He certainly didn't want to do that. So I feel like now the next time, and I don't know if he'll come mow my ragweeds in June or July, but the fact of the matter is that when I need something, he'll be there for me.
I think it's cool how we develop community like that. And we all, you know, the closer you get to other people, you know, what their needs are, you know what your needs are, and you know what their resources are. And once you develop those friendships, you really have an opportunity to not only benefit yourself, but benefit your neighbors. And that's a really cool concept.
It just feels good too.
It does feel great to know that you can contribute and maybe save a little bit of cash at the same time, and everybody walks away smiling. I think that's kind of a cool thing. So as we move here into our next segment, and just talk about, how do you start bartering? Where do you find and where do you connect with your barter partners?
Well, for me, I think it starts with that story I just made about the gravel. You have to look for something. You know, if you can see a need and you have the ability to help that person's need, or to fill that person's need, then you ask the question. You know, I went to visit the neighbor yesterday about tomatoes in his garden. I saw the gravel, and there will be a trade made. But we had to stop and ask. But I also like to use, you know, the bulletin board at the feed store or the Facebook Marketplace, for example. Those are great places to at least ask the question. And by the way, if you see something for sale, that doesn't mean that that person will only trade cash. That means that person hasn't had the right deal in front of them. So if you see somebody that wants a $3,000 motorcycle, you might say, well, I've got a wagon ride for your upcoming wedding venue. You know, that's easily worth $3,000, and you go from there.
What about you? How are you finding and connecting with people, Bo?
The size of the group, I think, is enlarging the longer we do this kind of stuff. I had it not been for this podcast, I probably would have never traded with Jesse. I think as people in our community start hearing these episodes and being on our Facebook page, I think we're going to grow our community pretty large just in and of itself there. But I like Joe's thought process of just always keeping your eyes open for that available partner for bartering whenever you're just out and about. I think there's lots of opportunity there to do that.
I think one of my favorite things I've ever heard is, you know, what's the worst they can say? No. So you can always float that question. And, you know, if somebody's got a tractor that you want to trade some labor for, you don't have a tractor today. So if you offer that deal, if you offer that trade, and they say no, you still don't have a tractor. You're not any worse off. Nobody's mad. You just got told no. So just asking, I think, is the big first step. So when you do make these trades, what are we doing to establish clear terms and agreements? Is that just part of the conversation that we're having with the person when we make the trade? What are some things we need to think about when we do this?
So I think Joe's was, you know, perfect. I think Joe has a real clear understanding of something that he has of value and places his own terms on that right up front. I think that would help a lot. Had me or Jesse been better at just understanding our value of the products that we had, we wouldn't have stood there for 15 minutes going, "Oh, well, what do you think yours is worth?" "Well, I don't know. You know, I just want some birds. What do you think yours is worth?" "Well, I don't know. I just want some rabbits." You know, it would make it a lot easier just knowing what you have, I think.
I mean, is it okay to walk in and just say, you know, this is the value I place on my stuff. Here's a starting point. I know everybody hates, anytime you're doing any kind of trade, everybody hates placing a value on somebody else's stuff. That's always, it seems to be a hang up, whether you're buying a car or trading labor or trading rabbits and quail, placing a value on somebody else's stuff is always hard. So how do you get over that hurdle? Joe, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it really kind of depends on if there's a place to go look for those values. For example, if we're going to sell a steer, we can easily go to a recent sale barn and look up last week's report and say, you know, a 550-pound steer brought X amount of dollars. Now, those will have, you know, different body scores. So it gets a little gray in there, but we can always say, "Listen, here's the mean price." We can argue whether it's a great cow or a sorry cow. So let's just pick in the middle. So we can kind of go, we can get a fairly accurate number on a cow, but there are no statistics available on rabbit or quail. So you just have to find somebody that knows in that, you know, or do some Facebook posts. Understanding everything on the internet is ridiculously expensive. So we need to have some real-time experience. So I would say, even though, Bo, you said you know, neither of you were happy with the quality of animals you bought at the auction, at least that's a good starting point. And you could say, "Hey, listen, I bought a really sorry rabbit, a thin rabbit or a very young rabbit, and he was $10 or $10,000. And I don't know that there's a $10,000 rabbit, but in the show world, you might, I mean, it's pretty competitive in show rabbits. So we want to establish where we're at. And that just takes somebody having some idea. And then the two of you agreeing on whether or not that number is accurate.
So do you think, me and you had just recently been to that auction.
Right.
So could we take the auction prices of the normal rabbit that sold, the normal quail that sold, and just under the assumption that both of our animals are of higher quality than that, but still use that as a ratio and say, for instance, quail sold for $2.50, a rabbit sold for $10. So we're at 4 quail to a rabbit. Would that be honest?
Yep. And then both of you could say, "Listen, we've got a 4-to-1 ratio, but I feel like my rabbits are worth $40, not the $7 one." And you can justify your price accordingly. You know, sure, if you both say, I've done this trade in trucks one time. I traded a buddy of mine straight across. I needed a 1-ton. He needed a 1/2-ton. His was older than mine. Mine was newer, but we decided we would go look on the Blue Book, the Kelley Blue Book, and both of them we would say were in fair condition. So we agreed to whatever Kelley said we had as far as year model and mileage. Both of them would be fair. I mean, you can argue in either direction. So we said, "Let's just agree that they're both fair, and whatever that price is, we're going to trade." And guys, my little half ton, you know, I really felt bad because the 1-ton truck, in my estimation, was worth way more than what I gave for it. But then after a year of talking to this guy, and he said, "Man, I'm so glad to be shed of the 1-ton pickup. I'm much happier with this 1/2-ton. So I left that trade feeling bad, like maybe I'd screwed my friend, but he felt the same way. So it really, again, it goes back to your statement, Bo, of if both parties leave happy, that's the most you can expect.
I feel like this, it might change depending on who you're trading with. If it's somebody that you met on Facebook Marketplace, you might have some more reservations and you might be maybe a little bit more firm in establishing those terms and agreements when you're in that kind of scenario versus trading with Jesse. I think, you know where Jesse lives. Jesse knows where he lives. We're all friends. So maybe that's a little more informal of a barter, and we can both walk away feeling a little bit better.
There's always going to be greater risk when you trade outside of your circle of your community. You know, your circle of friends, you know, I know for a fact if I'm going to trade trucks with Bo, that he's going to represent that truck the way it actually is. You give up that luxury when you trade outside your circle. So if we found somebody to trade trucks with on Facebook, we don't have any sort of background, and you need to, you know, make the agreement much firmer for people outside of your circle.
Just as we move a little bit further, and as we talk about bartering, what are some tips for successful and sustainable bartering relationships? I know a lot of times when we get into bartering, certainly I doubt you and Jesse are going to barter just that one time. It's going to be an ongoing relationship. So how do we maintain those relationships to ensure that they're successful and they're sustainable? What are we doing to kind of keep those relationships up? Bo, do you want to take a stab at that?
So I was going to jump in there at the end of what Joe said. So I think, you know, if I traded anything with either one of you, and say it was a rabbit, and 2 weeks later that rabbit died, neither one of you would. Neither one of you would assume that I knew that going into it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one important thing whenever you start bartering and doing it inside your circle, is to have the understanding that if you're truly friends with that person, that if the barter goes bad, you know, if Jesse calls me and says, well, dadgum, one of those rabbits died, I'm going to say, well, come get another one. Like, it's not going to be any big deal. Like, there is none of us here that would lose a friend over a $10 rabbit. Like, you can have all my rabbits before we're not friends. Like, it's just not going to happen.
And, you know, I think that's important, whether it's a bartering trade inside of our circle or just an outright sale outside of our circle. You know, as a cattle producer, if someone buys a bull from us and it's not what we claim it is, if it doesn't get their calves pregnant, we need to be ready to refund their money up to maybe a year later. So, yeah, we'll go cash a check, but we don't go spend it until we know he's happy with the trade. Yeah. And I think that's real important, that as entrepreneurs, whether it's a bartering arrangement or just a cash outlay, that we respect that customer, whether it's your friend or someone, a stranger, with the same amount of care and trust. It's you know, you don't want your name out there and say, oh, we bought a bull from so-and-so and it was no good. Don't screw people. Simple as that. That should make life pretty simple.
I know we all have expectations when we go. It seems like the more we buy things online, the greater our expectation is. You know, to Amazon, you can send anything you buy right back in a box. I'm not saying we need to necessarily adopt that policy, but we do need to have a good policy of taking care of our customers.
You know, frankly, that's the world we live in. You know, the Amazon has created that sort of a buffer, and I think it would be a sad state of affairs if we as homesteaders can't offer the same sort of guarantees to those inside of our circle. And what does that say about our values, period, if we don't stand with those same guarantees outside of our circle?
Just goes into taking pride in what you do. You know, if you're raising rabbits and you're taking pride in that and you're producing a good rabbit, obviously your intention is not to keep every rabbit you raise. You're going to have some excess. So making sure that you produce a good product and you trade a good product, you're not going to take the runt out of your litter and say, here you go, there, have a rabbit, you know. I think really just taking pride in what you do, especially as you get into bartering and dealing in some of that surplus product, really goes a long way. Joe, I want you to talk a little bit as we think about sustainable bartering relationships. You talked a little bit when we were having a conversation today about developing a vested interest in both sides of the exchange. And I think that's an important way to kind of mitigate that and ensure that both parties are happy. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and what your thoughts there?
Yeah. So I have a trade that's a several year trade now. It's been going on for quite some time, and it's probably the single most important one I have to date. And that's with what I call our farm manager. And this farm isn't so big that we need a farm manager, but it's sure nice to have one. And what we did there, and it all came about accidentally, we had a neighbor that his son showed some cows in school, and they needed a place to keep them. And anyway, we sold him some cows, and the father and son came out and built a relationship. They started showing cows, and they grew together, and they loved it and had a great time. And then the young man got a wife and a baby and had other interests. But the dad decided he really liked working with cattle every day. And so he said, well, do you mind if I keep some out here? And he started coming out, and when he did his chores for his few head of cows, he did mine as well. So, for example, he didn't have ground. He didn't have doesn't have the equipment to unroll hay. So he came to my house, and if his cows needed a bale of hay, my cows ate out of the same bale. So he would go over and say, well, I'm going to grab the bale truck and go feed. And it's kind of evolved in now that about a third of the cows on our property are his. But what we've got out of that is a very vested interest. So I can get up and go on vacation, or I can focus on my garden work, on the bigger projects when it comes time to work the cattle or to castrate or vaccinate. We do all that collectively. But the day-to-day stuff, the moving of the hot wire that we do every day, Ted does that for us. I can't even begin to tell you the luxury that allows us. It affords us so much more free time to know that someone's out there who knows cattle, who knows the cattle individually, and can say, hey, Matilda looks off today. What do you think? And then I'll stop what I'm doing, run out there and look and say, it looks like she stepped on a rock. Or maybe we need to get her up. She might have some foot rot going on. So we, with two sets of eyes on that, two sets of vested eyes, we're much more likely to find things going wrong that we can get ahead of early. So I'll just tell you, we'll do without on a lot of things here on this farm before we do without the arrangement I have with Ted. Very fortunate to have him, very, very glad. And I would ask anybody, any homesteader, to develop a relationship like that so that when you want to leave, you have someone that knows your animals individually and knows where the feed buckets are, and you don't have to go through the whole process of teaching somebody what your daily routine is because they already know it. So Ted's out here every day, and I thank my lucky stars every day for Ted. That's probably the best trade that I've got.
Well, it's nice, and as we dive a little bit more into that vested interest, when you can hire somebody to come out and check your cows, they're not necessarily going to look at the fence when they drive by. But Ted's got cows out here too, so that fence is just as important to him as it is to you, and he's really going to keep an eye on things. And when you drive by, if it was all Ted's cows, then he was just renting the place, you're not necessarily going to care what the fence looks like, but you've got cows out there too. And when you both have that interest and you're both vested, I think it just goes that much further in making that relationship mutually beneficial. Bo, do you have any thoughts on kind of that type of a relationship? Or
so I think I'm going to go a completely different way on the sustainability side of that. And it's something that I hope, the three of us and some other people eventually get to is finding our own strengths and our own weaknesses and relying on somebody else's strengths to cover my weaknesses. So if I find out that my raised bed garden is horrible at growing tomatoes and Joe is superb at growing tomatoes, but maybe Joe, like you said on some past episodes, he struggled with things like potatoes or carrots or something. Perhaps I can do better at that in my raised bed. So, hopefully at one time, this is the ideal system that I've always thought about, because you can't be good at everything. And, I don't just want to eat carrots and potatoes. Joe doesn't want to just eat tomatoes. If at some point in the future we can put our strengths and weaknesses all on a table, then maybe I quit growing tomatoes. Maybe, Joe never has to worry about not having carrots and potatoes again. And then you're in a place, because I'm sure when Joe was trying to grow carrots or potatoes, it was extremely frustrating because it wasn't working. So think you can get a lot more sustainability out of a system developed between, a close circle of friends like that, to where you can concentrate on what you're successful at, which brings more joy to it. We're always more joyful in something we're successful at than something we're failing at.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and even the most recent, you know, I've got 3 head of cattle now on my farm that came from Joe's farm, bought them off Morgan. I'm not sure that I'm going to be a cattle farmer. They're huge. I know very little about them. We may end up finding out that maybe I need to grow the pigs for us to butcher every year, and we trade out pork for beef or something. And I think that's a really good look at making it sustainable in the long run. Because I think everybody's goal, like I would love to say, my family hasn't went to Walmart in the last 2 years, but we're miles and miles away from that. Like, my family's nowhere close to that. So
I think that goes a long ways towards supporting that L factor that we've talked about before. If you don't love it, don't do it. And if you're really struggling, like Joe, with the potatoes and the carrots, that L factor goes away really quickly after a couple of seasons. And you're like, you know what? Screw this. I'm tired of it. So when you can develop those relationships and you can start that trade cycle, you really get a lot of your joy, because Joe really loves tomatoes. He's got more varieties of tomatoes than you can take a stick at.
Get growing.
Yeah.
It would be really easy for Joe to go, you know, somewhere in the future to make a trade with one of us and put in an extra row of tomatoes if he had something coming in return, because he knows them so well and can grow such nice tomatoes. It's a smart trade for everyone if those end up working out.
But I can't grow a beet to save my life.
They just beat you every time.
Every time.
Oh, Lord. Let's move along here and let's talk about our last segment today. And I just want to take a couple of minutes to talk about some real life bartering stories that we've had. And I know we've shared a couple already. I'll start this one off. One of my favorite stories wasn't me personally, it was my great uncle Olin. Used to live down here at McDowell. And there was a mill there, and they grew a lot of wheat and corn, and they would take their raw corn or their raw wheat, and he would take it in 20-pound bags and walk it down to the mill. And they had a bartering system, so they would mill that grain, and then they would, if they brought 20 pounds of wheat, they might get, you know, 5 pounds of flour back. And that was, I always loved listening to him tell stories about walking down with the wheat. And just, I thought it was a cool system they had. You know, you've got a mill, I don't have a mill, I've got a shitload of wheat. Let's make a trade and let's exchange those services. I always love listening to those stories. It's probably my favorite real life bartering story. Joe, what about you?
Well, you know, it's funny. We go back. I listen to your story there and remember hearing one very similar from my grandparents. And it was just that it was, you know, it's very idyllic and it's very romantic to say we can trade. But the fact of the matter is sometimes the best things come from that. Some of the best things come from that trade. This week, my neighbor left and went back to Massachusetts to for a funeral. And asked me to do chores for him. So I did a week's worth of chores, which really weren't that hard at all. But he brought us back some sea scallops. And I have never in my life seen scallops so big, or have I ever cooked one. But this week I cooked a giant, big, fresh, zero food mile. Think about that for a minute. Zero food mile sea scallops in the middle of Missouri. And we can say they were zero food miles because they were traveling anyway. I probably couldn't afford those sea scallops. I never would have got them here in the Midwest, way too far from the ocean. Guys, I think I had one of the best meals of my life over a couple hours of trading labor for sea. We didn't figure that out ahead of time. He just brought me sea scallops, but I consider that a really good trade.
Bo, what about you? What are some personal experiences you've had with bartering?
So again, I'm very, very new to the bartering system. I've already talked about mine and Jesse's barter that we made here recently. Yes, I will try to delve into some history as well then on that. The person that I work for, they grew up around this area, and I've heard a story from one of their mothers, which is now into her 80s. This would have been more like in the Easyville area. which is his neighbors to McDowell that Tyler was talking about earlier. And it was about, you know, the wheat fields and the community down there. Well, their family owned a thresher, which I was totally unfamiliar with. I had no idea what a thresher was or anything. But their family owned the thresher. And that entire community, whenever it was time to harvest, went from field to field. And it was everybody's fields. And, you know, one family might own three carts. You know, the kids, you know, were chopping, you know, different things. And I always just thought that was a really interesting story. And I think, you know, the thresher was of such expense, like they got a certain portion of each field's harvest, you know, for bringing the thresher. But, you know, it was an entire community coming together and bartering labor and equipment and services and product and all that all in one, you know, one day and all that going on. And I just always thought that was really cool.
It's nice that when one of us succeeds, all of us succeeds. That's kind of a cool idea. And I think the more we get into bartering, the more we'll see that in our circles and our own communities. That really supports that. So as we wrap up today's episode, any key points that we want to bring back from bartering, some of the things that we've talked about?
So I think, again, just to be real blunt, don't screw people. I think that's one of the key takeaways if we're going to enter this, because it takes a certain level of honesty and integrity to go into a barter with somebody. So make sure that you go into it not way overvaluing your own product to try to get something for nothing. So don't screw people.
Joe, what about you? What are your big takeaways from today?
Mine is really just make sure we take off the blinders. And although I think more important on trying to find them is the words that Bo said, don't screw anyone. This is your community. You're building your community, and you certainly don't want to develop a bad name. But take off your blinders. You know, don't look at this as a trade opportunity, as a one-and-done type of thing. Look at it as a lifelong investment. You know, when you have your neighbors showing up and say, hey, you gave me some tomato plants, here's all my tomatoes. You know, that's very rewarding, and it really feels good that, you know, you've made a difference in not only their situation, but in their entire life. So for me, it's you know, be the neighbor indeed, and not just the neighbor in need.
I think, and we talk about it a lot, but just building that community goes a long way. I think that's an important point we need to take away from today. You're not going to be able to establish bartering relationships if you don't have a solid community, if you don't have a solid understanding of the resources you have to offer. I think we need to kind of take note of what we have to offer. But as we're out there building that community, understand what other people have and what they have to offer. Really helps you out when you're in a bind and you say, oh, I need, you know, my tomatoes fail. I need some tomatoes for dinner tonight or whatever. Understanding what's available in your community and having some grasp of the concept of bartering to really put those deals in place.
And, you know, if you're new to homesteading and you have recently purchased a property in rural America, understand that there's very few people here compared to an urban environment. And it won't take very long if you screw somebody before nobody wants to trade with you, before nobody wants to come out and do services for you. So sometimes I hear people complain about how hard it is to get into a certain community. Oh, I just moved here and the folks are not very friendly. And I would challenge you and say that that's probably because you weren't friendly to them. So let's make sure that as you're developing your homestead community, that you are absolutely taking care of your reputation first.
All right. Well, we want to thank you guys for coming back and listening to us jabberjaw about bartering this week. We did put a post earlier today. We want to hear your guys' bartering stories. What are some things that you're doing in your communities? How are you bartering? What are some things you're trading? We appreciate you guys listening. Please reach out to us. Give us any feedback that you've got. Tell us any stories. We love hearing about that. I know we had a post up here recently about books, and we got a lot of feedback on some books to read. And we all three of us, I'll speak for all three of us, we enjoy seeing those different things, and we want to hear from you guys. Thank you guys so much for being there. Do get on our Facebook page, like and follow us, share our podcast, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from you. Anything else from you guys before we close up?
I don't think so.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Farm Foundations. We hope you found our discussion on bartering in the homesteading community helpful.
If you guys have any questions or topics you'd like for us to cover in the future episodes, please don't hesitate to reach out to us on social media or through our website.
That's right. And be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. We have some exciting topics lined up for the future episodes that you won't want to miss.
Thank you all for tuning in, everyone. Until next time, happy homesteading.